Alright, so hello and welcome to another episode of The Raven in the Road. So really excited to be kickstarting this new season where we are exclusively spotlighting musicians. So the purpose behind this is just to bring some firsthand insight on how to become a successful musician. Now, Johnny has immense experience as a musician from spending time in Nashville, touring between coasts, and even headlining on cruise ships. Now, while he's an incredible musician, he's also one of the most business-minded musicians I have ever met. So when thinking about who to bring on first as a guest, Johnny, I just knew it had to be you. And I really think that you have some exceptional insight for those who are looking to go down a similar path. So without further ado, Johnny, would you mind just taking a few minutes kind of saying hello and giving us a little bit of your backstory?
Yes, of course. First of all, thanks for having me. This is This is awesome. I'm excited. So I can give you a little bit of background and everything just to get some context. So my name's Johnny Rocket. I am a solo guitar vocalist. I have been a musician for a little over 10 years now. So it's been kind of weird thinking back on that and everything. Because I'm not a little bird anymore. So it's been a nice transition into now that I've gotten into my 30s and settled into my career. I really like this stage though. But no, I got started actually just out of college. I started waiting tables.
Okay.
You know, just died inside. Right. Every day. Dude, it was just bad. Although I stand by the fact that I think most people should do that job at one point in their life.
Yeah,
just
I agree.
To get a perspective on what service people go through and what they have to put up with. Just the daily disrespect, the occasional Karen, male and female. Silver lining to that and everything is that it got me actually a little bit more comfortable doing something outside of my comfort zone because I didn't have any experience in the restaurant or service industry prior to that.
No.
It was a total nepotism hire. I totally admit it. I was not qualified to work at that job, and it showed. So I was going over. I was a terrible waiter. I did my best, and I can honestly say that because there were many times where I did not want to do it, and that was most days. But yeah, it was just it was such a blessing and privileged to ease into being a musician more and more. And I feel like that's what a lot of people go through whenever they transition into doing creative work, is that they have this initial period where they're kind of caught in between what pays the bills and doing what actually, you know, fills the soul. So while I was waiting tables, I was able to do a weekly or monthly residency. I think it started out as a monthly residency, but it was, you know, just a local place in Louisiana where I grew up, where I could play consistently. And it was great. And I actually met the owner while waiting tables.
So it was just, there you go. Look at him.
Yeah, it was a weird little small world coincidence. So it's one of those things that once I started doing that, it's, you know, I caught the bug. I just fell in love with performing and having that, you know, immediate response, connecting with an audience. Yeah. It was an incredible experience. You know, tap into nostalgia, which is what I think musicians essentially do, since they aren't singing their own music. We're all kind of joining in on songs that we all know, and some of us love, some of us loathe, you know, some of us, but everyone generally has a memory attached to these songs.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard about this and everything. So they say like the peak nostalgia period for a person's life is whenever they're establishing their identity between the ages of like 10 and 15. So during that time period, they stop listening to their parents' music and start listening to more music from their peers. And it's also that transition where they start spending more time with their friends and less time with their parents and family members, which I thought was super interesting, because when I think back about some of my favorite music, that's the time period, which I thought was pretty interesting. So I always, when I'm scanning a crowd, I'm always kind of thinking about that, like, if they're in, you know, their early 40s,
right,
then they're likely, you know, born around, you know, the late 70s. Right. And, but they were growing up, they don't really have that much nostalgia attached to the 80s because they were too young, but they're full in on grunge. That's what I seem to find in everything whenever, and that's why I feel like age is so relevant. Whenever I'm talking about gigs or talking about other stuff. But yeah, no, it's not to ramble too much, but I got an offer from, you know, a friend of a friend, that they needed a lead guitarist for a band out of Nashville. So, of course, I was more than happy to stop waiting tables.
There you go.
And join that. But that was the catalyst for me. Whenever I got that, of course, it was definitely a jump because I was going to Nashville to audition, so it wasn't an official offer.
Oh, okay.
So I was going there, and they're like, hey, we need a lead guitarist. And I was like, never been a lead guitarist. I'm more of a rhythm guitarist and a lead vocalist, but, you know, I'll see what I can do. Oh. And they're like, also, it's a country band. I'm like, ooh. But hey,
I'm already out here. Yeah.
You do what everyone else does. Lie on all about all of your qualifications and abilities and hope you can do the job when you get there. So that was pretty much the case for me, and I've just kept doing that. Just fake it till you mean it. So I auditioned, it went well, and we went out on tour. They were based in Gallatin. I don't know if you're familiar with that area. Gallatin is a town just north of Nashville.
Okay.
But I spent most of my time with the band out on tours. So we were spending, most of our touring dates were in like North Dakota and Wyoming and Montana.
Oh, wow.
States I would have never gone to.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Yeah,
yeah, it was a weird experience and everything. Because I found myself going to places, I was like, man, if it wasn't for this, I would never have gone to Williston, North Dakota and played a show. And I could tell you right now, if you were curious, North Dakota is as underwhelming as you'd expect it to be.
I had a buddy.
We could just pretty much sell that state.
There you go.
Just
give it back to Canada.
Or yeah, give it back to the Canadians. I mean, they pretty much act like Canadians anyways. Yeah. All right. And then, you know, it's just like, it's a million dudes and like five women. So it's not a target rich environment for a young man and a musician. I'm like, where are the ladies? Do they exist in this state? But Wyoming and Montana, on the other hand, are gorgeous. Absolutely stunning. Wind turbine country. I loved it because we played all over those states. And of course, everyone, you know, it's just like they go straight to Jackson Hole, which is a big ski resort and everything. And of course, at the time, I didn't ski. But it's an absolutely beautiful state. And of course, you have Yellowstone National Park, which is stunning. But all over, we played Douglas and Cheyenne. And Casper, Jackson Hole, Gillette. I mean, it was absolutely incredible and cold. Very, very cold. Can't get away from that. Oh my God, it's unbearably cold, especially coming from Louisiana. And I can tell you right now, there is no ice in these veins. I was not prepared. It was like a scene out of Cool Runnings. You show up and they were like, that's all you've got?
Right.
They were like, oh boy, we need to go to the store right now.
Nice.
Because it was an eye-opening experience. I hadn't experienced sub-zero temperatures, and we get there and it was like 25 below and just to feel that kind of cold in your bones
and shorts, like, and a rain jacket,
not there's not enough layers on this earth to get rid of it. I mean, is I got over snow and the cold very quickly. Especially driving in it, that was stressful. And of course, we had a touring bus and a trailer. So I was just like,
Did we just hydroplane four like lines of traffic?
Oh God! Yeah. Oh, yeah. When I was going up through Iowa, like the wind was kicking, which is another thing. No. Yeah. Wyoming stole like $60 from me. Just the wind just took it. So yeah, it was just one of those things, where the weather and. And also, it was a strange thing to have a culture shock within the country, because it's just like it's a very different thing. Like Southern culture and Midwestern culture are very different norms, different likes and different tastes. Incredible, just immersing myself in a culture that I was, even growing up in the South,
right?
Like none of my family members listen to country. None of my friends were very interested. I had never been to a rodeo. Or a horse race or horse auctions or any of that stuff. Like these are things that do not come up.
Right.
Like never did. And I went to all those while I was doing that. And it was tons of fun. I had a blast.
What would an average work week for you entail?
Yeah, absolutely. So generally speaking, I don't book Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's just not a heavy booking day for me, generally speaking. That being said, I always consider it a pretty good win to get a booking on those days and everything. Okay. Because generally speaking, of course, in Charlotte, it's a high-density brewery market here. Unlike
Wyoming?
Yeah.
I don't really
have a comparison, because I've been to Portland and there's more breweries here.
Okay.
So that's definitely a huge market that appeals to a lot of soloists in general. And that's also another shift, because I've had a lot of people come here and everything. And I do think that Charlotte is a very friendly place for musicians, but I think it's most friendly to soloists. Whether you're a pianist or a guitarist, a guitar vocalist and everything, if you're able to provide entertainment solo, then I think this is a great fit for you, because Charlotte offers opportunity and there aren't so many musicians here that the market is oversaturated like it is in music cities around the country. So if you go into Austin, if you go to New Orleans, if you go to Atlanta, or Nashville, you have, from what I experience, an oversaturation of musicians. They're pulling talent from many different states and cities. I don't think that's the case here in Charlotte, which is great because for work and everything, you get less pushback for prices, and you get less lowballing offers from venues that I saw was much more common trying to gig in like Florida. It's just like usually it would be like in between contracts whenever I used to work on cruise ships. So you would have also different standards of what they expect of a musician and, you know, duration of play. I think it's very reasonable here. Most places that I've seen, I haven't had a single venue expect 4 hours of play. which, I mean, it wouldn't matter to me. I'm not playing that long. I'm not doing that. That's way too long. I mean, I did it on cruise ships because, you know, you do what you have to do when you're in the trenches and honing your craft. But I have no interest in playing that long as a soloist because it's just, that's an incredible amount. It's taxing on the voice. I don't care how seasoned you are and how warmed up you are. Singing for 4 hours is, in my opinion, a marathon kind of show, which I don't think, I wouldn't suggest anyone that does it for a living to do consistently. Just for long-term vocal health, there is such a thing as over-singing and over-performing, which is another big thing that I'm moving into now. It's just finding a balance. Yeah. How much do I want to work and how much do I want to have time to myself to, you know, help out with my family and their kids? Because I have quite a bit of, I have 7 siblings and they all have, short of my sister, they all have children. Mm. So just being able to be there for your friends and also just have some reprieve, a little bit of time to yourself. So yeah, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, if I have a gig, it's usually a corporate event. Mm. Or it's with like a hotel or a residential event, which I've talked to you about and everything, which is just an untapped market. I tell my soloist friends, whether they're pianist or guitarist, it's definitely a market to target for that group. And everything. Right. It's less appealing to bands. Maybe if you have like a trio, but all these luxury apartments around here have a vested interest. And this is what I tell all the musicians. They have a vested interest in creating a community among their residents. Because if they don't, there are 10 other luxury apartments around that they can go to for a very similar price point. So if they want to retain their residence, especially if they happen to up their rent a couple hundred dollars a month, which is, as we know, with the housing crisis, that's no small thing. Like, you know, it's, you know, a very easy adjustment to make for them, but that's seriously $1,200 to $2,400 a year for a lot of people, which is significant. So if they're going to get people to sign those and having long-term tenants and having people and not having these high turnover rates, then they have to throw residential events. They have to cultivate that community. And I think it's something that musicians and soloists particularly can take advantage of. Yeah. And it's something that I've taken advantage of because I started doing it during COVID and I didn't think it would continue. Yeah. So I got here and we haven't gone over this. So I got here 4 days before the shutdown here. And I moved from Nashville. I stopped doing ships in 2019 and wanted to commit to Charlotte because I saw a lot of promise. And God said, no, sir. And he was like, I don't think so. I got here and seriously had 1 weekend. And then I went to set up a gym membership at Planet Fitness. And they're like, we're going to be closed for the next month. And I'm like, oh, you got renovations going on? And they're like, no, COVID. And I was like, what's that? So, of course, that was, you know, I think... Oh God, I think it was late February, early March, 2020. Yeah.
Well, so it was late March, and I know that because I was in a similar boat. I was set to move to Australia. I already had a opinion. Yeah, right. Everything is in line. Had the visa worked out. The plane was going to take off March 23rd, and 3-4 days before the plane took off. Like, oh yeah, by the way, we're shutting down everything. I was like, oh man. So I was like, that's one way to keep me in Charlotte, I guess. But it always say it worked out. So then my wife got married, had kids, so.
Oh yeah.
I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's
pretty thankful.
Honestly, that is kind of a silver lining, because if you gotten stuck in Australia,
oh, I would have been in jail. Hands down.
I don't think most Americans would have survived. Mm-mm. Because there was seriously, you couldn't go outside at all.
Yeah, it was like martial
law. That would have been a hard line for me, because I'm a big walker. I like being outside. It's part of my daily routine is to go outside and walk. I'm gonna slide into my old man phase.
No problem.
I have to get get my car.
Right, get the car right. There you go.
Get it out. Come on, no problem. I'm coffee fanatic and just bumping up that coffee more and more every day. So it's one of those things it's tough to swallow the pill and adjust at the time.
No,
but I just reached out because my sister, who lives at one of these apartment complexes, reached out and said, hey, there's an R&B trio playing in the courtyard right now.
You could do this.
And she's like, you need to reach out. And I did. Yeah. And I had one booked at that apartment complex. Wow. And that was my second show, because I reached out to another one, which is like a 55 and up, kind of assisted living. Yeah. But when I found that when they say it's 55 and up, it really should just be like 75 and up, because everyone is wise with decades of opportunity to be so. Yeah, I think they market it to get some younger relative term in there, but I would say most of these people were definitely on the 75 and up. So I played a lot of those. And just marketed it as balcony concerts. So I would set up in a courtyard area or around a pool, and people would just come out on their balconies and just listen for as long as they wanted to listen and get trashed as long as they wanted to get trashed.
Yeah. And their bed's right there.
Yeah, some people would do it for a lot longer, and they would just yell out requests across the way. Awesome. It was actually a lot of fun, but I didn't think it would continue.
Right.
And it has. And we're sitting here, over 3 years later, and I still play, a couple dozen at least every, I would actually say several dozen. Also that I partner with NW Raven, which I'm sure you're familiar. NW Raven is a management property.
Okay.
That manages a lot of properties and a lot of different, it actually makes my job a lot easier, so I don't have to reach out to each individual complex.
That's awesome.
I can just talk to the GM, and then he can coordinate with the leasing team or the event coordinators, and just hey, Johnny's going to be here on this day, and it's a great option because, I should say number two, why this is such a great market to target, is that typically these residential events are weekday shows. So it doesn't conflict with a lot of your weekend slots that you want to, say, go out and play at like OMB or, Protagonist or any of the breweries that only book on the weekend.
Right.
This is a great option because I've played a dozen of these, and they tend to be on like Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday.
Well, I feel like they're going to make sense then, especially if it's like a younger crowd. They're more often, they're staying at home through those weekdays, and on the weekends they're going out to Protagonist.
Exactly. So it appeals and it works. It's one of those things that really puzzle pieces come together. Because the residents are going to be there, and why would they book on the weekend when everyone's out and about?
Right.
Yeah. So it's and it makes for an early night. I mean, this just
the older I get.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't have any interest. I joke with my friends. They're like, God, as soon as the fog machine and lasers come out, I just want to go home. Give me my book, and that's why I love a lot of these markets, whether it's apartment complexes or breweries, because I'm home at 10 usually, even after breaking down and chatting with people. The apartment complex is much sooner usually, because it's usually 5 to 7 or 6 to 8, which is you know, chef's kiss. Wonderful. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. So yeah, I would, that would be a market to target. If you can play by yourself or you are a duo, I would say trio stretching it as far as broad appeal to these leasing teams. And there's also like a budget concern there. It's easy to go in as a soloist. And I mean, I hate it for bands because I do think there's a place for them. But there are also venues that only book bands that aren't interested in booking soloists. So there's an energy, you know, baseline that they want to maintain, and bands appeal to them because they can maintain that kind of energy. Whereas as a soloist, if you want 3 hours straight of just nothing but dance, high energy stuff, I'm not your guy. But if you want some like melancholic music, Nora Jones and John Mayer, there we go. Sit back and relax, sing along.
All right, well, so I think that's a pretty good segue. So how would you describe your sound as a musician and just kind of your performance? And also if you had to be like Johnny Rocket as a brand, like when you book me, this is kind of what you get.
Yeah, that's a great question. I like that one. So I've actually had to really boil down and come up with what I like to call like a musician elevator pitch. So if you only have a short amount of time to make an impression, and which is why I think how you present yourself will always be important. No matter what you say, because the resource is scarce, and that's time. You don't have enough time to have a conversation with every single person you come across. So, which is why I always like this quote that style is showing people who you are when you don't have time to tell them. So it's just like, you know, so it's how you present yourself is important. But as far as how I describe myself to people, I usually always start with the name and everything. Hi, my name is Johnny Rocket. I'm a solo guitar vocalist and I create a full band atmosphere solo. So that's pretty much what I would describe. Another kind of mentor type and everything, Matt Santry, who's another guitar vocalist that I frequently defer to for, you know, advice and business plans and, you know, what is he doing? He also has programs and everything that I've purchased in the past. He's a well of information. But just a little bit further down the path than myself, he's in his 40s now. He's managed to move into his career, and he's currently in a place that I would like to be once I'm that age. So I think he's a great resource for musicians that want to, you know, step their game up, want to focus in on what they do that's unique, and that's what he starts with, and he calls it a unique selling proposition. And it's coming up with, you know, a one sentence or very short two sentence thing that demonstrates who you are and what you do and offer that's unique. Because it's one thing to have something to offer, but if it's as a rudimentary understanding of supply and demand and economics and everything is having something that other people don't. So that any potential client coming to you with a need will have, you know, a reason, another reason.
They can incentivize that,
But yeah, no, that's how I would describe myself. And then, of course, you can always expound upon it, because that's how I know that you have something initially good and everything, because it's kind of like that hook and everything that encourages someone to follow up and say, oh, okay, I like that. You know, a full band musician, a full band atmosphere solo. Okay, what does that mean? What is it? It's just like to kind of hook them with some kind of like tagline that encourages them to follow up with some questions. And then I can get into, oh, well, I'm a loop artist. I use a loop station so that I can do vocal and instrumental looping in real time, which is a big part of creating that full band atmosphere without having a band. So you can take requests and you can adopt songs and add things from a loop station, which is just an RC30. A clear example of that is Ed Sheeran. So he actually started using the same loop station that I currently use and I've used for years. An RC30 Boss is, it's incredible. It's super versatile. It's the best pedal that I've ever bought. And it's the first one I bought. So it's seriously going on. Like, you know, I've been looping for 7 years now. And it's still going. Like the inputs are still good. Like that's awesome. It is an expensive pedal though, as far as guitar pedals go. In any case, I like that feature of being able to lay down, you know, a chord progression and then build on it.
Yeah.
Because it's just a lot of fun. And then, you know, usually if it's the right crowd, typically like a younger crowd, they tend to appreciate it a little bit more because they kind of have a better understanding of what's going on. Usually if it's an older crowd, I don't bother with looping.
Gotcha.
So if they're over like a certain age, usually they want to hear Sweet Caroline. Yeah. Right. And they're just like, give me some Van Morrison.
Quarter in the jukebox, yeah.
And they just want to sing along or dance or whatever and everything. They don't really care for looping in my experience. But if you catch that like sweet spot, like the, in my experience, like the 30 to 45 age group, where they like the classics, but they also like some of the musicianship and artistry that you can bring to adopting songs that they've grown up with, but changing it a little bit and adding your own flair. I do like that aspect and everything, but that's my long-winded sales pitch there.
No, I like that. Because I've done a similar thing. Because like for me, primarily has been instrumental, and so over the years, it's been just reflecting. You know, what are the compliments? What are the most common compliments I get if I were to look at every time someone said something to me over the last year? It's like every time. Yeah, I've got some. You know, good guitar. Yeah, but most of it has always been, oh man, that saxophone. And so it's like, okay, so the market says saxophone. So now it's, how can I restructure myself to lean into those strengths? To basically, you know, just give the people what they want.
Give them the sax.
Yeah, and then you talk about having something that's interesting, different, and that's why I ended up coming back to saxophone. What was just that? I was like, man, to be like a really exceptional guitar player and to cut through everything. I mean, you've got to be that 0.03% with honors. Like,
oh, for sure.
Cause there's so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like saxophone. Like there's not that many people that play saxophone. So you can be pretty like, all right.
You're the only one that I can think of at the moment.
And it's got that novelty.
And I know dozens of soloists in the area. So having that feature is absolutely, I would steer into that.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's such a overwhelmingly loved instrument, like it adds that, like, and every single bride and groom knows that if you have a sax player in your band, like that's just
it's official.
It's just, right. Yeah. It's a huge like plus and everything because it's a portable instrument that's easily mic'd and they can get down, they can interact with the crowd.
Yep.
It's just a very, and not to mention, it's just like, it's a very sensual instrument. Right. In my experience, that's a very similar response. Like, and I don't play sax and everything, but I definitely understand the appeal.
Yeah.
And if you can play it, use it. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Right. I see it. My cousin does a very similar thing. He lives in Austin. But now he's got a band background and he's a multi-instrumentalist and he does looping and everything, but he has the same experience. Like it really is, you know, ear candy. for a lot of people. Like, and he does a lot of busking, and it's as soon as he busts out that sax, like, that's when people, you know, really start to pay attention, which is great because he can do it, especially from like a loop standpoint. If you can, if you can lay down a couple of, you know, you know, maybe a simple, you know, guitar pattern, everything, whatever it is, and everything, it's an initial loop and everything, and then you start soloing on it with sax.
Yeah,
dude, it's gravy. Come on, let's do this.
Yeah,
it's awesome. So yeah, I would definitely encourage you to steer into that and and incorporate the sax aspect in your outreach.
Yeah, well, and it's, especially in the looping part too, because it really helps develop that process. So like you're saying, you know, get the guitar line going. You know, if you have a little bass octave pedal, you know, drop that.
Yeah,
if you want to do any kind of little percussion stuff in there, you know, and then the saxophone and being able to do the undo, redo functions and everything. And it can really turn a 3-4 minute song into 7-8 minutes, but it's not like a begrudging 7-8 minutes. Yeah, it's like, oh man, like
Metallica
what's
song.
Coming there? Right,
another guitar solo.
Another guitar solo. Yeah, and so it's really interesting. So it's now it's like, oh, I have like too many songs in this set. I'm like, oh, okay, good problems to have.
Yeah, no, it's I can't encourage you enough to steer into that, because it's such a good way to add like another like tier to your because so few people do it,
right?
And not only that, it's just like so few people are multi-instrumentalists, even among musicians. And then to have that, it just complements the show structure so well. To have, if you're a looper, if you're a guitarist, if you're a vocalist, if you can throw in a sax in there, oh my God, dude.
Yeah.
It's
something else. Well, and I don't know if you know Tash Sultana.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, so I went to go see her live years back, and it was so cool because, you know, same, and I had no idea. I just only knew her guitar and vocals. And she's going, you know, 30 minutes in, she pulls out a piano, and I'm like, oh, well, she can do piano.
Yeah.
Awesome. Everyone's freaking out. Then she goes a few more minutes later, she's pulling out like drums. And I'm like, this chick is just straight up playing drums. Yeah. And at the very, like the final 15 minutes, she pulls out a trumpet. And I'm like,
I know. I didn't know if you knew about the trumpet. I was like, dude. And trumpet is, you play sax, trumpet is hard. Dude, I was like about to pass out.
Look, right.
Just trying to get a single sound out of this thing.
The pressure is insane.
What? Yeah. It is like, I've played a sax. Like I totally get like, I was like, oh, this is accessible. Right.
Yeah.
I feel like, of course, it was nothing. Like, I was just hitting, I was just messing around. But the trumpet, like, that feel like that's a whole different, like, tier. Because it's just like, your lip placement is also very particular.
You only got three buttons.
I was just like, wow, okay, this is, that was an eye-opening experience.
Yeah.
Like, trying the trumpet for the first time, I was like, God, I don't know. It was exhausting. You know, a whole bunch of people passing out, because I would.
Yeah.
For sure. No doubt about it. But that's interesting. Yeah, the guy that I joined the band and everything, so the lead singer, the one out of Nashville and everything, he actually played sax and he pulled it up out of it every now and then. And it was great because very few, you know, lead vocalists have that like in their back pocket.
Right.
Same thing with my producer who lives in LA. He produced my last EP and everything. Oh. And he's, you know, big R&B artist and producer and Berkeley grad. I mean, just incredibly talented. I mean, unbelievable. But yeah, he has the sax and everything. And having that component, I mean, it's just like, I don't see that appreciation going anywhere.
Yeah.
I think it's only going to get more, in my opinion. Yeah. But
well, that's what's cool, too. And, you know, we used to do that with them when we did the duo because it was so big. You know, so we'd start off on something like acoustic. And then, I would switch to electric. Then a little bit farther in, she would pull out an acoustic. Then, you know, towards the last 2-3 songs, that's when the saxophone would come out. And so you get this like tiered, like, what's going to happen next? And there was always something. So instead of just kind of giving all the cards out at once, it's like, just gradually kind of.
Yeah, you don't start out, you don't play your best card first.
Yeah.
Come on. Yes. First track in, you're just, shirt comes off, you know, suspenders.
Yep. And, well, and that's what I really try to tell my kids too, especially with solos. I was like, dude, start, so hilariously simple with a lot of space. Yeah. Like, give yourself so much room. Yeah. I see that so many times. And I'm like, you know, the first song, the guitar solo just, and I'm like, dude, it's amazing. But now every solo is like that solo for the rest of the set. And it's like,
yeah,
having that dynamic, just like hold that leash. Just
yeah. That's such great advice. Because John Mayer has said that time and time again, who I think is one of the best guitar phrasers.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, really making each note sing, because he solos, that's what he always says, that he solos like a vocalist would sing, which I think is a great way to put it, which I think is also another reason why his solos are so unique.
Right.
And you'll actually see him, because I saw him at Spectrum a couple weeks ago. And yeah, he was here. He was solo. And it was so great and everything. But you'll see him when he's performing, singing along to his solo.
Yeah.
Singing the notes.
Yep.
Which I think is, a great thing to do. And everything. That's how I feel like you found something catchy, you know, from an instrumentalist point of view, is having not only, you know, from a lyrical point of view and everything, is having, you know, lyrical hooks, but instrumental hooks.
Yeah.
Something that's just like,
well, God forbid you can tie those two together.
Yeah. Right. Then you get a Grammy.
Right. So, yeah, there you are. Yeah.
Man, that's still waiting on mine. Right.
It's funny to say that, because that's, for me, that was a big thing of, you know, I'd have a phase where it was, okay, doing a lot of solo stuff. How can I now think about my guitar like a bass player? So now, here are my chords, and then, oh, here's my bass line. Or how can I interpret my guitar like a drum? And so it's like a doom, doom, catch, you know, maybe I'm splitting the strings, doom, doom, catch, you know, add any kind of percussive hits. And then especially solos, like you're saying. And that's how I always know if I ever go back and look at clips of people talking to me, when my mouth opens and you see my lips just start mumbling, I'm like, oh, it's about to go somewhere. But yeah, and it's just that same thing. It's, you know, how can I interpret my instrument like a voice? Saxophone, that's why I love saxophone so much, is before, and I still kind of am to some degree, but I've always been really insecure vocally. But for me, saxophone was that vocal expression that you can kind of get on guitar, but you really get a pull out on saxophone. And it just revolutionizes how you think, how you pick, how you play every note in that instrument. So,
It's I would encourage you to keep going and everything, and not let that vocal aspect hinder you at all, because it's one, because as musicians and everything, I feel like we're kind of stuck in that thing. It's like we're always going to be more self-critical of our own performance than anyone else in the audience is going to be. So our standards of ourselves and then of other musicians are always going to be noticeably higher than the consumer, especially someone that's, you know, getting more and more intoxicated. Go right. With every
second.
And so it's just like, it's also kind of reminding yourself, you know, you aren't playing for your favorite artist out there in the crowd. You aren't auditioning for this isn't a make or break. Kind of taking a little bit of that pressure off and realizing that, yeah, it is good to have high standards for yourself to get better and commit to your craft and everything, but also bring a little bit of humility that, you know, it's okay. Like if you don't hit the note, or if you don't sing this song as well as the person that wrote it and performed it thousands of times, that's okay. Like it's okay to not sing, you know, Tennessee Whiskey like Chris Stapleton, because Chris Stapleton doesn't sing it like Chris Stapleton all the time. So it's one of those things. Everyone, that's one thing that I had to get past is having a little bit more grace with myself from a live performance standpoint, especially writing and everything, because I was kind of under this impression that if you can't do it live like you recorded it, then you're somehow like, you know, fraud or something like that and everything. I was just like, which is just a ridiculous thing. Like, you do dozens of takes for each part of your song. Like holding yourself to that standard, I think, is corrosive. So yeah, I'd say get out there and everything. I think you might be surprised just going to hear more and more musicians. That you likely hold yourself to a higher standard than they hold themselves. At least that's my experience after seeing hundreds of musicians play on cruise ships and living in Nashville. Like, steer into what you do well, and I wouldn't stress too much about the vocal aspect. In my opinion, it's as long as you aren't tone deaf. I honestly don't think that
there's people, a plugin for that.
It's just like again, like this is a disconnect, I think, between musicians and consumers and everything. When people are just out at a bar and everything, they just want to hear their song.
Right.
And just have a drink and just enjoy the experience and everything. You know, the fact that you can't sing, you know, Creep just like, you know, like Radiohead does it and everything and hit the high note and hold it out as long as you can. That may matter to you as a vocalist and may matter. It matters to me as a vocalist and everything, but I don't think it matters that much to the, you know, your everyday. Yeah. Consumer and everything.
All right, so thank you for listening in. We're going to have the second half of our conversation coming out soon.